From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. We've got a ton of show up ahead, so I'm going to cut right to the chase. My guest is Orifice Vulgatron of the seminal UK hip-hop act Foreign Beggars. Their new album, The Uprising, is out now on Mousetrap Records, and they're touring the States all through November. This is the Dirty Phonics remix of Apex. Today's show is brought to you by RDO. Listen to millions of songs ad-free wherever you are, on the web and on your phone, even offline. RDO works on your desktop, Android, BlackBerry, Roku box, iPhone, iPad, and more. On with the show. The big news from the Foreign Beggars camp is obviously the new album, The Uprising, out now on Mousetrap Records. How has reaction been thus far from not only your fans, but your peers as well?
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. It's a bit of a departure from what our old albums were musically and sonically, just because it's much more kind of electronic music inspired in terms of the production. But the response has been really cool, actually, from old fans and new fans. I think that was something it's a move from hip hop to be making hardcore, like underground dance music. But yeah, I think, you know, we kind of got deeper with it, so it's not surface stuff. But yeah, the reaction's been good. People are liking it, people are playing it, people are appreciating. So we work with quite a lot of people on the album, and all of their affiliated camps have been really supportive as well. So it's been good.
Yeah, absolutely. To sort of cover that base once again, I mean, within the first few songs, Amen to Apex to Crep Hype, you travel through straight up hip hop, through Moombahtone to dubstep and then trap. Was this a conscious decision to come out of the gates and be like, hey, we can do it all?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was because the first three albums, there was a little bit of a disparity between the music we were putting out and the shows we were doing, because over the years we brought a lot more of that. I mean, we've always kind of infused that electronic side into our live show, and like especially over the last 5 years, I think we've kind of five, six years, we've been pushing the grime and dubstep side quite a lot. But it was a thing of, we were using a lot of other people's music or using music that was unreleased, so we wanted to make a conscious decision to... Well, that's when we did the previous EP. I think that was like the first departure, the first bunch of original electronic music that we put out that wasn't remixes. I think it wasn't necessarily, we weren't trying to like pick every genre and part of every genre. We just don't want to be limited to a certain type of sound or a certain type of production, because, you know, we do like it all. I mean, I like so much other stuff that, you know, isn't even on this album. And it's kind of hard knowing where to go next, because one second I want to make, you know, a really soulful, Dilla-esque music. Next minute, I want to make some dumb, stupid shit. Then I want to make some grime. Then I want to make some house music. So I think you have to be a little bit specific in terms of finding tracks and things that work together. But yeah, it was definitely a conscious decision to diversify and be free.
And you touched on this briefly, but working with artists as talented and varied as Salva, Nasty Nasty, Starkey, Knife Party must have been a huge thrill. Is that what keeps things fresh, working with tons of different producers who all have different visions and idiosyncrasies?
Most definitely. I mean, this is the first album that we decided that we were going to be the only rappers on the album, and because working with other producers is amazing, different styles, different sounds. We've always collaborated with people since the beginning, because I think the fact that this just hip-hop as a medium kind of is so open for collaboration, and I've always found collaborations interesting, even, you know, taking it as far back as like Anthrax and Public Enemy, you know what I'm saying, making noise. Like, just whenever I hear artists collaborating together, it's really inspiring, and especially like two artists that you're really inspired by doing something together that no one else could come up with, like Mad Villain or Champion Sound or something like that. It's, you know, it's amazing to see. So for us, working with new producers, work with, you know, people who are really doing it and bringing that new, you know, really representing for what they do is, yeah, it's special. We love it.
And this is a big release for you on Mousetrap, but you've worked with other labels like Schism's Never Say Die, and you've got your own Dented Records. Uh-huh. anymore, does a label have that much of an impact on your sound or your goal, or does everyone pretty much leave you alone and let you do your thing?
Fortunately for us, they completely let us do what we want. Never Say Die was wicked, and Schism's an old friend of mine. We were working, we were working on stuff before they even started Never Say Die as a label. But in terms of the tracks, the sound, we pretty much pick, we get to A&R the whole affair. So like for us to be able to put like a Laser Sword collab and a Skrillex collab on the same EP, just, you know, that makes me really happy. And also one thing about Mousetrap, which was a defining point as to why we did sign with them, is because they didn't like predetermine any sound, any production. They just literally gave us carte blanche to do exactly what we wanted to do. And Be happy with the hip hop side of stuff. That's why the first single they decided to put out, which is a complete departure from anything they've done before, really, was Palm of My Hand.
So let's travel back in time. You know, you're talking about Anthrax, and you're talking about J Dilla and Madlib, and so I gotta wonder, what's your own musical background? Was it hip hop from day one, or obviously, you know, you've got a passion for a variety of styles and sounds? I kind of want to dig in and see where all that comes from.
Me personally, I guess it starts like, you know, my first like musical love was probably MJ.
Sure, 84,
83 type of days, you know, like when Thriller came out, that was the first shit I ever fell in love with. And I think
Absolutely. Like
pop music, you know, popular music in the 80s and 90s, there was a different kind of substance to stuff that was coming out. It wasn't as manufactured, you know. There was a lot of artists were much more independent, and you know, they were really individual. I think there was less of a generic pop scene, you know?
Certainly.
Everything was welcome. But for me, kind of ran concurrently with like the amazing pop music that was coming out at the time was like the fact my mom is like a hard rock lady. She grew up in San Francisco. So like from as early as like 84, I was listening to like Rat and Motley Crue and all of that kind of stuff. So that was a big part for me. So like in terms of rock and roll in the 80s and heavy metal, and it turned into heavy metal by the end of the, like after Appetite for Destruction, it just got heavier and heavier. So I think by 92, 93, it was like Deicide, Napalm Death, Sepultura.
Oh, beautiful.
I'm saying, so like Pantera. I mean, like that was like something that myself and my brothers fell in love with. And that was something that we grew up doing. But at the same time, I remember it was about when N.W.A. came out and Ice Cube first came out with his shit as well. I mean, that's when I really fell in love with hip hop too. So it was like, so to hear Anthrax and Public Enemy at that time in my life made complete sense, because, you know, we were listening to underground hip hop and we were listening to heavy metal at the same time, and in love with both of them separately at the same time. Like everything that was coming out on MTV like 91, 92 was still legit music, you know. So everything grew up on everything, really.
To get you way off on a tangent, I mean I can't find anything from metal that more aptly mirrors, or even though it precedes it, but Max Cavalera's Sepultura's sound is so slow and heavy, and that is echoed so much in contemporary dubstep. It's insane to me that a lot of people don't see these worlds combining it again.
They don't see the connection at all. I mean, even like a lot of drum and bass stuff, certain artists that came out, like if you listen to like the drum patterns and like some of the harder drum and bass that kind of, when it turned into drum and bass, like I'm thinking of groups like Cause for Concern, for example. Like if you literally just switch the hi-hat pattern for double bass drums, you'd have a death metal track on your hands with a fucking heavy, disgusting riff there as well. So there are so many parallels, but I think it's a lot for people to be able to digest that sound if they don't get it in the first place.
Sure. You got to have that previous knowledge.
Yeah.
So getting back on track, tell me about the primordial stew from which foreign beggars arose. How did you meet and begin to work with Metropolis and No Names and you know, everyone else that you've brought into your circle?
Essentially, myself and Dag Nabbit, who produced the first three albums, we were friends from Dubai and we used to play in bands when we were kids, etc.
Mm-hmm.
He got into DJing and production. I started rhyming in about, this is about like 95, 96, 97 times. So we started throwing parties in Dubai. Moved to London in 99 to continue. Like, I think it was drum and bass and hip hop were like main things that kind of brought, drum and bass the main thing that brought me back to London. And wanting to be an MC and kind of hip hop is what has, you know, kind of kept us all together. And that's how we really met.
Sure.
So we were doing, just throwing drum and bass parties, pirate stations in about 99, 2000, 2001. But also the rap side of stuff. We were making hip hop at home. And it was just on the circuit, really, that I met, like, actually, it was through a guy called Gizrock, who used to be in the Mixologists, one half of which is now Benny G from Jack Beats.
Okay, yeah.
So they were a crew back in the day, like a turntable crew. And I was at school with him, and I met No Names, who they used to cut together. And I met No Names because he came because we were doing like a production for Wizard of Oz, and I was doing the lighting, and he was doing the sound, but he had like his turntable and like a vest axe, and he was scratching the whole sound effects in. So just got to speak in, and then just when the first record was ready to come out, we wanted to put a live show together. I called James up. That's when we put the live show together. But I think he was in university with Metropolis at the time, and they had another band called Focus Few, which is like a live band with two or three MCs, vocalists, and they used to do shows and open mics as well. So just through the hip hop circuit, basically, I think like there was parties like Deck Effects and Kung Fu back in the day, and those are like the two main open mics, and you just kind of went through, people would be doing shows, but then you meet all the other MCs, and that's it, you just politic and move from there. And that's when we kind of came together. 2002 was when we were recording the album, and actually no, 2003 we put the first 12 out, and that's the year we spent recording Asylum Speakers. And Metropolis was away, he was in South Africa, he came back, and then we were studying at music college called SAE.
Yeah, sure.
We just linked up again, and we were recording the album, he came through, and out of all the MCs that came through, we kind of linked on a different level just through the kind of hip-hop that we liked. We were both very inspired by the whole Company Flow movement, that underground weird New York shit. Yeah, and I think that's, yeah, then just that was it, really. That's when we formed, that's when we decided, yeah, this is the unit. Dag Nabbit on the production, myself and Metropolis, and then No Names DJ.
And around that time that you formed, around 2002, the big notable British acts were The Streets and Dizzy Rascal was just coming up. At first, what were you trying to do? Were you trying to emulate anyone or just really figure out your own sound?
No, we were just making hip-hop. I mean, like, there was, like, okay, the most visible UK kind of vocal, kind of spoken word, rap-related people, I think, that had, like, international visibility at that time were obviously Streets and Dizzy. Both two very different people, but they both came out of the garage scene.
And
we were in a slightly different scene. There was like a really strong kind of hip-hop scene that was happening with bands like Task Force, Jest, Roots Maneuver, and Kashmir, Verb T, Low Life Records, YNR Productions, Tommy Evans. Like there was a really like healthy kind of fertile underground hip-hop movement. And that was the scene that we came out of, really. We weren't really trying to, I think, like, when we were putting our records out, that was, like, especially when we were making our album, and that was the first album, like, proper album that we made. So I think we learned a lot, and we invested a lot of energy into getting the craft right. And, but, yeah, I think, like, you know, I mean, at that point, hearing The Streets used to upset me quite a lot, because I was like, fuck, you know? And it's, like, especially, like, for international visibility and being an MC and the fact that we all rap in English accents and also being kind of like staunch with our pop values, etc.
Sure.
You know, it used to upset me because there were so many talented, seriously, seriously amazing MCs in London, in the UK, like, you know, coming out of England, who weren't getting the recognition, who weren't getting that visibility. And to see Dizzy Rascal and that whole grime shit pop off was initially in the beginning, like, I mean, I love drum and bass, and I've been a drum and bass MC as well, and I love garage, so for me, hearing it was very inspirational to see like the development of, like, you know, the inception of grime, and see it go from garage to real hardcore rap music. which is, you know, British rap underground music, which was very similar to what we did.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I wasn't really concerned with making grime. I liked it and always fucked with it, but it wasn't something that fully wanted to infuse with the music. But as the scene developed and MCs got better and better and better, and, you know, just as it got more inspirational, we're definitely inspired to bring that into the fold as well and just, you know, come with our own interpretation of it. Yeah. Been around the ends, been around the globe. So many things on this rocky road, but I will never change, I will sell my soul. Yeah, we've been all over the map. Now we're back, you can call it a journey. A long while since I had a routine, still wondering if it's all for me. In fact, I'm not, but there's one thing I'm certain, I feel like my whole life's on track. And even though I don't see my own room much, I wanna swap it for all of your stack. See with me, even though I don't feel fully grown, I'm an old man, and that's what the truth is. And even though I get wrapped in the hype sometimes, I always step back, take 2 seconds to reassess, take stock in the progress. See what's real, what's not, what's hopeless. Where we at, where we going for the long haul. Bigger family,
never stop from Foreign
haul.
Beggar's new album, The Uprising, out now on Mousetrap Records.
Tell me about the transition from garage to grime and then into those early days of dubstep, just from a, you know, a sort of a survey, a historical survey perspective. And also, I wonder, were you and the guys on board from day one? It sounds like it took a little time for you to work your way into that scene.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I've always been a fan. But there were two scenes which, you know, like the underground UK hip hop scene and the grime scene were two completely separate scenes just because of like the arenas they existed in. They're very similar, but they just, there was a point in London in about 94, 95, 96, 97, the way drum and bass had popped off and jungle music had turned into this fucking phenomenon was amazing. And I think the entire youth were inspired by jungle, drum and bass, and as were the older generations of ravers. And it was really amazing because it was like a complete cross-cultural thing. It was like, it wasn't a white thing, it wasn't a black thing, but everybody was involved. And it was like a whole, like, nice, you know, rather than it being a certain type of people who go to a rave, it was like everybody was there and it was just hardcore underground music that was ours, you could say. Room 2 and most of the jungle raves, they kind of moved away from the happy hardcore shit. So Room 2, you'd have like a lighter option, which was garage. And it was like a really, like, it was like underground garage. I think it was like very like Chicago house that kind of inspired the garage movement here. And it's like, you know, producers like Todd Edwards, who's actually from, I think he's from New York. But I think Todd Edwards, he had a massive influence on the sound. At that point, it wasn't even two-step yet. It was very skippy, but it was still four to the floor. And it kind of turned into gradually turned into two-step garage. So UK garage. And then it was about then, it was between like 98 and 2001 where garage just spread like wildfire, because it was really, at that point, all the kids, all the pirate radio stations would be playing garage, like they'll be playing jungle and garage, and the garage just kind of opened it up to, you know, a whole different like cross-section of people, because drum and bass is very hardcore music, so garage was much more accessible, girls would like it a lot more, and literally you couldn't go to a single bar, pub that didn't have a DJ who was dressed garage style to the nines, you know what I'm saying, like Moschino jeans, fucking snakeskin loafers, like, you know what I'm saying, it was the style back then, so literally every pub that you go to would have like DJs playing garage, kids would be playing garage at home, making mixtapes, like pirate station rotations, it was like hundreds of pirate stations in London, you know, at least 15, 20 kids DJing, you know, adults, kids, and everyone was putting out records and vinyl at the time as well. So loads of labels, and the fact that it was a really popular music even meant that people could actually invest in their labels if they're doing it properly. You know, and it was much more of an immediate return, you know, immediate kind of
return on investment.
But I think the way the music developed, I think the way where grime came from, because obviously there's all the drum and bass raves, they used to have MCs at the parties, and in Room 2, there'd be MCs there kind of hosting it. But it didn't really get that lyrical. They'd have like little kind of chorusy things they'd do. But as more and more kids got involved, a lot of the kids who were rhyming in the drum and bass room would start rhyming in the garage room. So it kind of became more of an MC thing. And I think that's also kind of due to pirate radio. There'll be a DJ, MC hosting the show, but then they'll also be spitting lyrics. And then more and more kids got involved in rhyming on garage. And it took about 4 years between about 97, I think like 97 to 2001, 2002, for kids to really get their skills up. And you sort of go from like, yeah, bubbling cool, one to the two, ladies, you know, like that kind of stupid shit, to spitting lyrics and getting deeper and coming with flows and patterns. And it just turned into like sick underground hip hop, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
By the time Dizzy Rascal shit came out, that's like, you see, like it goes from like being like a happy kind of uplifting, slightly melancholic vibe with the music to a little bit darker and darker. Cause like the drum and bass kind of influence kind of influenced the garage sound, but actually no, I think there was a dark side to garage from early, because that whole speed garage shit popped out as well, which was very jungle inspired.
Mm-hmm.
It was at that point when the music got darker. I mean, there was just a lot more, so it didn't necessarily get darker, but there's a section, like a strand of it that got darker, and it was a bit more minimal, it was a bit more dirty with like bass and beats, so the kids could spit lyrics over, so less kind of chopped up vocal samples and songy hook bits. And that was pretty much the birth of like what is now dubstep and grime and school breaks. Because at that point, it was like kids would start making their own beats. They'd be on pirate stations, and kids would be at home with fucking, I don't know, what console was it? Like a PlayStation? it was something that you could make beats on. It came out on the PlayStation, I think, PlayStation 2. And that's what all the kids were making their beats on. So that had a big influence on the sound of the beats that were coming out and the sound of the music. So it was more minimal, more bassy, a lot more clappy, you know, kind of like the dancehall side of it kind of inspired it as well.
Sure.
It was just like, you could put on certain pirate stations and it's like a bashment thing. There's like four MCs going hard back to back to back to back to back lyrics, and that's when the scene kind of split, because that's when like this whole kind of youth movement came into it. It was more of a ghetto thing, and it was all about the MCs and rappers, and the DJ became kind of not secondary, but you know, the DJ was there for, you know, to play beats basically for dudes to rap over. And that's when grime popped off and turned into its own like subgenre. But I think at that point, I don't know if people were calling it grime. I think they were, maybe, when Dizzy Ross, after Dizzy shit came out. But that's when basically that sound, that style of garage also like broke off and turned into dubstep. Because especially with the lyrical stuff, they start pulling out some of the snares. So it wasn't on every single, you know, like that's when it went from like 140 BPM to 70 BPM, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it just kind of turns to halftime shit. There's also another side, which is like when all of that two-step stuff was popping off, like Artful Dodger and Craig David, all of that shit.
Sure.
Also doing that with the garage songs, because like it was very R&B at that point. And, you know, there were, the Timbaland style breaks that were kind of halftime, you know, the jiggy hip-hop shit that influenced a lot of the garage stuff. So those kind of hi-hat patterns and beats, you know, like it was that, but it was like a lot darker, and it was inspired by the drum and bass side and the gritty, grimy side. So I think that's where the music broke off and kind of dubstep turned into its own instrumental thing. Just before that shit happened was when this like a whole new school breaks thing popped off. Because then you have tunes like Decline and all of those dudes who were making like, you know, that Don't Smoke the Reefer track, which was garage. But then that movement kind of turned into breakbeat, like this new school breakbeat movement.
Mm-hmm.
Lasted for a bit and then turned it into its own thing. But I think the main four musics that came out of it are like garage, then you have dubstep, you have grime, and you have the new school breaks.
Fast forward to a couple of years ago, you get hooked up with Skrillex. I think you were really the first act to collaborate with Sonny before he blew up. And Skatta, of course, went on to be this enormous hit. You know, how did you even know to be in league with him and sort of predate the explosion that he experienced?
Well, I mean, I didn't see that shit coming. Like, I don't think anybody did.
No.
It was, I actually had some immigration issues and I had to leave England because I still have an Indian passport.
Mm-hmm.
I was living in Holland with Noisia. So I just based myself in Europe so the group could still be touring and we could still be hitting the European circuit as much as possible.
Sure.
Just living with the guys, I was living with Noisy's manager, Walter, and Sonny had come over to meet them and do demo some tracks because he did a Sonny Moore album. And then basically the label decided to shelve it and he also said, yeah, I want to do something more electronic. So he came over to work with a few people like Mustard Pimp and Borgor and Noisia. And we just arrived at literally the same, like one day apart from each other. We were staying in Walter's house.
Mm-hmm.
So they demoed some stuff and then he went away and he decided he's going to do the whole album with Noisia. So they did a whole album together, which was like the Sonny Moore album. And that shit was, you know, it was really, really crazy, really fucking good stuff. But for X amount of other reasons and internal organization, they didn't manage to come to a deal. So that album got shelved as well. In the meanwhile, while all of that stuff was happening, he made a whole bunch of Skrillex stuff and he knew Deadmau5. And so Deadmau5 was like, yeah, cool, put the EP out on the label. I actually demoed something for the Sonny Moore album because we were just there at the same time. And then when he had this thing ready to go, I introduced him to Bear Noise and they'd done this track. So he just hit me up and was like, yeah, just put some verses on this. let's get it in. So we did it, and it came out. It's just like, just you just meet people, and like,
yeah,
you get inspired by them. You want to work, so you do. You know, it's pretty much exactly how we met everybody else, whether it's an MC or a producer or a DJ. Just meet, chill, hang out, hear each other's music. You think you can fuck with each other? Yeah, cool. Yeah. You know, you just get it in, and then I think it was like initially it was like we met incidentally through music, but we became friends, and yeah, so that was it. Really, just reconnection.
Yeah, I'm an all-time fighter. I make a next guy look like an actor. So I'm out of my world like they matter. But when I touch mic, I see them and scatter. And they wanna talk big, but when it comes to bigger than birds, they can't splatter. So I tell them, relax yourself, go home to your mum and stop being a catter. Many guys wanna par, many guys are gonna take this thing far. Many guys are gonna be some big stars, but soon enough, them and the bouncer, you slap off. So there's no need for chatter, no need for anything cheap, but that's that. Anybody making a thing for you, smack up, back up, fam, I need to round back.
Cause if I had a clutch on a Magnum.
Now you're in the middle of this big UK tour, and then you're hitting the States beginning at the end of October in Philadelphia. I wonder, do you have to adapt any way when you're in thick foreign beggars country in the UK and then coming over to the US to do dates for fans who may have never seen you before?
Yeah, definitely. I think we have a set which works for everybody. But certain places, certain shows that we do, like, for example, if we hit, like, West Country or hit Bristol or hit places where, like, there's old-school foreign beggars fans who play Glastonbury, for example, then we do bring out a lot of the classics that people know and love and want to hear. Those tracks might not, it might, you know, the context might not be right. For example, when we went and did the Mothership tour with Skrill, and we had, like, a, you know, a 40-minute set time, which is when we usually play about an hour and 10, construct a set that was kind of especially for those people. I mean, it's a different, especially playing in the States. At that point, Skrillex crowds who were younger, who were like freshly into like dubstep as his, you know, that side of the sound. We did definitely have to tailor the set, but we do have a set now, which is a bit of everything, really. And I think, like, you know, we'll play on a lineup with like four dubstep DJs and us, but we kind of make it a point to not just play dubstep at that party. We, you know, we want to break it up. We want to expose people to all the sides of the group.
Do you think that as the internet does what it does and gets everything out there and exposes fans old and young to a variety of music, do you feel like you've been granted more leeway? As you said, I mean, obviously a lot of the kids are going to want to hear the dubstep all day long, but as your fans mature and explore, that you have the ability to then say, well, listen to this drum and bass track that we did, or listen to this house track that we did. You know, it's you've been given a little bit more of a creative leash as you grow and evolve.
I think so, but I think also nowadays people, and even until a couple of years ago, like single genre raves or producers would be, people wouldn't diversify their sound that much. You know, they wouldn't fck with different genres too much, or they'd use another name, or if they did, then they wouldn't play that, you know, specific track at the show. But I think in the last couple of years, people are not limited to doing any kind of style of sound. So you have house producers making drum and bass, so you have like drum and bass producers making garage or hip hop. And I think like nowadays, I think many DJs have, you know, DJs don't generally stick to genres or tempos. They just play exactly what they want. So we do have a little bit of leeway because, I mean, all the stuff that we've put out hasn't been of a certain, you know, given. I think there was a stretch year before last when I think quite a lot of the records that we put out were dubstep records, and that's when the sound and style blew up. So a lot of people kind of define us as a dubstep band, which is quite far off the mark if you think of it. But yeah, we do have leeway because I guess we're rappers in the end of the day, you know what I'm saying? So, and the fact that we're British rappers means that we can take it anywhere. You know, we could take it to drum and bass, we could take it to like some Dirty South shit, we can just take it to the boom bap if we want to. So yeah,
that's perfect. Orifice Volgatron of Foreign Beggars, congrats on the new album. Good luck with the big tour. Thank you for the history lesson, and thanks so much for being on the Unz podcast.
Yeah, pleasure to do it, man. Thank you.
12th Planet's Martian Trapstep remix of Flying to Mars from the new Foreign Beggars album The Uprising, out now on Mousetrap Records. Their big U.S. tour kicks off in Philly on Halloween. More dates online at theunz.com/foreignbeggars. Today's show is brought to you by RDO. Listen without limits at RDIO.com. Please visit theunts.com for news, artist profiles, tour dates, and now tickets to some of the biggest shows across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the Unts podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theunts.com. That's A-N-A-N-D @theunts.com. Join the conversation at the Unts podcast on Twitter. We'll catch you next week. Daddy, daddy, daddy. Zop, zop, look who's back.